Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Before we get going with this episode, check out what's going on over at Patreon. Here's a preview of Guest Alarmist, where I step aside and let a guest walk us through a personal tragedy, and together we figure out who's to blame.
Truly, I think I even remember as I walked back to my car being like, come on, man, like, fuck. Like, just like, and he didn't care. I was even questioning, like, how much do I tell him? I hoped that he had seen it in my eyes when I said, even for an emergency?
Yeah. And that's a good plea. If you're watching the video, I feel like that's really good. If you had done that to me, I would have been like, yeah, all right.
Sympathy. Empathy for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I just couldn't believe there was no rule bending in that moment.
Go to patreon.com/thealarmist and subscribe today. Now, on to our episode. Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath. The Aftermath. Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we're speaking with guest expert Irv Muchnick. Irv is the author of multiple books about the dark side of sports, including Chris and Nancy, the true story of the Benoit murder-suicide and pro wrestling's cocktail of death. Let's hear what he has to say about the Chris Benoit double murder-suicide. Hi, Irv. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Rebecca. It's great to be on The Alarmist. If you can make it on The Alarmist, you can make it anywhere, right?
That's right. That's what they say. So I wanted to see if we could start off by having you give us some background on Chris Benoit. What was his upbringing like, and how did he get into wrestling?
Well, he was just a kid in Western Canada, in Edmonton, and he was a big wrestling fan. He started setting up chairs at the local shows of the promotion there. He started pestering the wrestlers, especially his idol, the Dynamite Kid. He pestered the promoter, Stu Hart, for the iconic promotion out of Calgary, Stampede Wrestling, and he started lifting weights, and eventually Hart took him down into his legendary basement dungeon, where he gave the brutal treatment to anybody who approached him about getting into the wrestling business. And he worked out with Chris and stretched him and did all the things he did to drive other would-be wrestlers away, but he couldn't drive Chris away. And he eventually was trained and started working for Stampede Wrestling.
Wow. And how did Chris get his nickname? And how would you describe his particular style of wrestling?
Well, Chris was a great technical wrestler, maybe the best bell-to-bell performer of his generation. He wasn't a great interview. He wasn't especially charismatic, but he did everything right and believably, and fans loved him for that, even though he was a pretty small stature for a pro wrestler. So the nickname, the Canadian Crippler, came about when he was working some years later for a hardcore promotion out of Philadelphia called ECW, Extreme Championship Wrestling. And there was a spot in a match where a move got botched and his opponent got badly injured. And in the way of pro wrestling, they just incorporated that into the storyline, like it was supposed to happen that way. And Chris was thereafter the Canadian Crippler.
Can you give us some background on the state of the pro wrestling industry at the time that Chris's star was rising? What was popular, and how was the industry keeping up with its viewership demands?
Sure, Rebecca. Chris Benoit came about in a transitional moment, really historical moment in wrestling history, when things were moving from a territory system to global brands. At the time of Chris's initiation with Stampede Wrestling, there were up to 36 territories in North America. Wrestling was run sort of like the mafia. Everybody locally did things their own way, but they sort of cooperated in terms of trading talent around and keeping out outlaw promoters who might impinge on in the territory of an existing dominant promoter. But Vince McMahon came along, a third generation promoter out of the East Coast, and with the rise of cable television and with McMahon's peculiar, and I must say in retrospect, clever vision, he took over the territories, created a truly national and even international marketing base, and pro wrestling, which had been this mom and pop operation, a kind of goofy fringe form of junk entertainment, was becoming an international merchandising juggernaut. And so Stampede Wrestling and almost all the other territories went out of business, and what we now call WWE and what was then called WWF, World Wrestling Federation, pretty much took over everything. Now, in terms of the style of wrestling, when McMahon was starting out with WWF, he was keen on creating family entertainment, and he was catering to like kiddie toy manufacturers as partners, things like that. So it was actually a somewhat softer product for a while. But because McMahon's way of doing business challenged the historical suspension of disbelief of pro wrestling fans, which is something we can get into in a little more depth, eventually things got more hardcore than ever because the ante was upped on supposed realism and real violence. And so Chris Benoit was in the middle of all this, and it's central to the narrative of his career as a wrestler and then the tragic end of his and his family's lives.
And how physically grueling was the sport at the time?
Well, look, it's always physically grueling, no matter, you know, what the naysayers and people in legit sports will say about wrestling. It's a subtle, extemporaneous form of sports theater. And, you know, whether prearranged or choreographed or not, the bumps are hard and real. The wear and tear on your body is real. But when you get into the hardcore antics of chair shots and weaponized foreign objects and all the other stuff, it just gets even worse. But the short answer to your question is wrestling is real, more real than people want to give it credit for, in terms of how hard these men and women work to entertain us with their storylines, which are storylines, but they cross over into real violence and real bumps and real hard physical labor.
How would you explain kayfabe? Does pro wrestling often spill over into reality, and what kind of toll does that have in the lives of these athletes?
Yeah, that's a multi-part question, but kayfabe is kind of a cross between the mafia and wrestling's roots, which are in the 19th century carnival tent. The mafia has a code of silence; they call it omerta, where you don't say anything about the business, you don't spill any secrets. But kayfabe, I think, goes beyond that. It roughly means keep it fake. The practitioners inside the industry are trained and are obsessed about projecting a kind of deadpan sense of reality about what anybody with any intelligence knows are actually theater elements. And the idea is that you never suspend your disbelief, even though if you're a smart, quote, so-called smart fan, that is not a quote mark, you know that everything is choreographed, but still you do this work to keep everybody on their off balance about what's real, what's fake. Vince McMahon himself said many years ago, he alluded to an old a television commercial for Memorex, the audio tape. Is it live or is it Memorex? And Vince McMahon was single-handedly responsible for the deterioration of kayfabe, because he, to get out of state athletic commission regulation and taxes, he openly acknowledged in a story that had got big play in the New York Times in the late 1980s that wrestling was not real. I mean, shocker, right?
Wow.
But that was an earthquake inside this peculiar industry.
And who was Nancy Benoit? How did she and Chris meet?
Well, Nancy, like Chris, was a fan. She was she lived in Northern Florida in the St. Augustine, Daytona Beach area, and she became a hanger-on at the regional promotion, Championship Wrestling from Florida. And there she met a wrestler, Kevin Sullivan, who got her to divorce her first husband and marry him. And she became a valet or a manager. She was a personality on camera. And then she and Kevin moved to the chief rival of WWE, out of Georgia, Ted Turner's World Championship Wrestling. And she again was a presence there as a manager and a valet. And the funny way that she and Chris met is that Chris was now wrestling for WCW, and Kevin Sullivan, whose in-ring career was winding down, cooked up an angle, which is what they called the storylines the bookers come up with outside the ring stories to fuel feuds and color and what they call heat. So Kevin Sullivan came up with the idea of making Chris and Nancy on camera boyfriend and girlfriend. And the joke in wrestling is that Kevin Sullivan is the booker who booked his own divorce, because they started hanging out so much together that they actually did become a couple. And Nancy divorced Kevin Sullivan and married Chris Benoit. So that's the story of Chris and Nancy.
And what was their relationship like?
Turbulent. Friends say that they had operatic fights in public when they'd go out to dinner with friends. They were always bickering. There was a physical violence, domestic violence. At one point, Nancy filed for divorce. She then withdrew it, and they reconciled. But we do know that it was a very tempestuous relationship, and it was one exacerbated by the stresses of Chris being on the road all the time and you know, fending off or not fending off groupies or other women wrestlers that he might have had affairs with. Mm. So it was a very non-fairy tale marriage once they did get married.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Do we have any idea when Chris started using steroids? Was the use of the substance common in the wrestling community amongst the wrestlers? And was it easy for them to acquire the steroids?
Yeah, Rebecca, look, he started using steroids from day one. He was a little guy. He probably naturally wouldn't have weighed more than 170 or 180. He needed to be bigger. He didn't need to be huge like Hulk Hogan, but he needed to be bigger than that in order to even get his foot in the door in wrestling and get up to 210 or 215 or 220 pounds. I don't know what they labeled him as, but he was gassed to the gills, as are so many of those wrestlers then and even now. I mean, you just can't look that way without artificial enhancement. And you know, wrestling's steroid issues are well documented. They had WWF in the 80s had a doctor in Pennsylvania, George Zahorian, who was the first person convicted under a new federal law that criminalized the prescription of steroids for non-therapeutic purposes. It's an open secret that wrestlers, a lot of wrestlers, I don't want to obviously use too broad a brush and say all wrestlers use steroids, especially today, but it's always been a big part of the game, and it's still somewhat part of the game. And Chris Benoit is implicated in that as anyone could possibly be. He used steroids, and when WWE had its so-called wellness policy instituted after the Dr. Zahorian scandals, he was one of the wrestlers who continued to use steroids under a therapeutic use exemption that a doctor signed off on. That essentially, it's very circular. I think because he abused steroids, he had issues with his testosterone production for sex and things like that. So he had a therapeutic exemption to continue to use steroids so he could keep his performance up in his personal life.
Wow. Now, if an athlete or a weightlifter takes steroids for an extended period of time, what are the long-term side effects? And can they become addicted to the substance?
Well, the second part of your question is easy to answer. Yes, yeah. it's very. You're addicted, as the Fernando used to say. It's more important to look marvelous than to feel marvelous, and that's their bread and butter. Is how they look on the television screen. So addiction is a given. As far as the side effects, they varied with, from one person to the next. I mean, there's some people who can tolerate it with a very little downside, and then there are others who have all these different large, pectoral muscles that get out of control, hair formations in different places, acne, and depression and mental side effects too. So there's just, the list goes on, and it's hard to give a one size fits all answer to what are the consequences of abusing steroids.
Mm-hmm. And what is roid rage? Because I know that this was something that was talked about in regards with this case. Did Chris show any signs of aggression that would have caused people around him to, see any red flags?
Well, he did have anger management issues, and you could say that's roid rage. But here's where I want to jump in and say that the popular term roid rage is a little bit of a misdirection. In the narrative of what happened with Chris and Nancy Benoit and their 7-year-old son, Daniel, on that tragic weekend in June 2007, it's roid rage is what, Hitchcock might have called a MacGuffin, because I don't think roid rage explains a murder, a second murder, and a suicide over the course of 48 or 72 hours. Roid rage may have explained the initial lashing out and killing Nancy, although I don't even buy that completely. I think, what I call, and in the subtitle of my book, I call pro wrestling's cocktail of death. The cocktail is brain injuries and drug abuse and wear and tear of various kinds. And the drug abuse isn't just steroids. It's also painkillers. It's sleep medication. It's uppers and downers. It's all these things that played havoc with Chris Benoit's mental state. So yeah, there's roid rage, but that's a kind of cheesy shorthand for this whole universe of pathological elements that alter the lives of these wrestlers in the worst case. And Chris Benoit, of course, was the worst case of the generation.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about the brain damage that is sustained. Before we get into that, can you walk us through the events that occurred the weekend of June 22nd, 2007?
Okay, so Chris is at home in Fayette County, Georgia, outside Atlanta, with his family, but he's scheduled to fly to Texas to appear in a house show you know, one of the minor events on tour in Texas, and then to a big taping of a pay-per-view in Corpus Christi, Texas, on Sunday night. Something happens. There's an argument of the last straw of Chris and Nancy's tragic and violent relationship, and he kills Nancy. And at that point, what appears to happen is that he, some hours later, or maybe as much as a day later, murders their son. And then finally, Chris took his own life by strangling himself from a cord from the weight machine in the basement. So those are the basic facts. And let's stop here to emphasize that there's no conspiracy theory with respect to who did it. Mm-hmm. Chris Benoit did it. The butler didn't do it. A home invader didn't do it. Vince McMahon didn't do it. Nancy's ex-husband, Kevin Sullivan, didn't do it. Chris did it. The difficulty comes with the timeline of when the higher-ups at WWE knew what had happened, how they managed it, how they trickled out the information to Chris's adoring fans, and how they avoided disrupting the pay-per-view with a vague announcement that Chris couldn't make it because of personal problems or whatever it was. They told the live audience and the pay-per-view audience that night. And then on Monday, staging a memorial tribute to Chris Benoit on their flagship show, Monday Night Raw, when they knew full well that they were going to be pivoting right after that broadcast to acknowledging that Chris Benoit was not a victim of that tragic incident, but the perpetrator of it. Wow. So it all gets all tangled up in the corporate politics and the manipulations of Vince McMahon and his company, and you know, all against the backdrop of this extremely cult-like and fanatic wrestling fan base, which is trading rumors around through this whole period about what happened. And that's, of course, largely covered in my book.
Wow. So were there text messages that were received that some of Chris's friends received during this weekend? That are you saying that the WWE personnel could have alerted authorities sooner?
Yeah, there are multiple strands of very suggestive, though admittedly still somewhat ambiguous, evidence about WWE's knowledge, pre-knowledge, at least by Sunday, which was the day of the pay-per-view. On Saturday, Chris cryptically texted several friends repeatedly, the side gate of the house is open, and said something about the dogs. They had guard dogs, and said it over and over and over again, and listed his address, which not everybody knew. And there's real reason to believe that there was a WWE wrestler who lived in the area, a British guy named Dave Taylor, who swung by to see if he could see anything, and everything was quiet. It wasn't until the next day that their next door neighbor, having been alerted. Well, let me back up here. Somebody in WWE security asked the Fayette County police to do a welfare check. And they went to the estate, and they were sort of scared off by the guard dogs, the German Shepherds. And they went to the next door neighbor, who pacified the dogs because they knew her, and she opened the gate for them, and they went into the house and they found three dead bodies. The problem with the text messages is those were on Saturday. WWE later put out a timeline falsely saying that it was later than that, as much as a day later. And when Chris Benoit did not show up for the spot show in Texas on Saturday, they scrambled and vamped and changed the lineup of matches that night. That was one thing, but it still raised a flag because Chris Benoit was fanatically professional. He was not one of those people who missed bookings. They knew then that something was amiss. And then they especially knew by Sunday, when he didn't show up for the pay-per-view, that that there was something much more serious going on. But they didn't want to know the details because they didn't want to have responsibility for not having alerted the authorities the instant they knew that Chris Benoit's house was a crime scene of grisly multiple murder. Wow. So that's the story with WWE and the pay-per-view in Corpus Christi and how it intersected with the events of that weekend in Georgia.
Now, after his death, Chris's brain was studied by neuroscientists. And what did they find?
Well, Chris's father, Mike Benoit, befriended a Nigerian-born doctor named Dr. Bennett Umalu, who, as the deputy coroner in Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh, was responsible for studying the brains of some dead Pittsburgh Steeler football players and for isolating a syndrome that he called chronic traumatic encephalopathy. Actually, that term is not new. It's been used in medical literature with respect to boxing for 100 years, and it describes what we lay people would call punch drunk syndrome. And what Dr. Umalu did is he applied the principles of CTE in boxers and was the first to make widely known what seems pretty intuitive now that we have, you know, medical journal articles talking about it and studying it. And that is that the same thing that, you know, that afflicts boxers afflicts people in a variety of contexts, and especially in collision sport like football, where you get hit in the head and in the body, causing the head to swivel and jar the brain multiple times a game, multiple games a year. So, you know, the scores are hundreds of traumatic impacts, even if they don't lead to actual concussions in the course of a football player's career. So that's a CTE in the football context. Mike Benoit asked Dr. Umalu to study Chris's brain. And indeed, we now know that CTE is a serious problem in the context of pro wrestling. Because of all the, not just headshots, but just the physical contact. And indeed, Chris had severe evidence of CTE, which is accumulations of tau proteins. And the symptoms are that they cause, you know, loss of impulse control, and anger management, and all kinds of loss of brakes and regulations of your mental life, and that's something that in the first edition of the Chris and Nancy book, I fault myself for not playing up more as I learn more about the subject, and in subsequent editions, I have accentuated that. And then including in the third edition that came out in 2020, which we're calling the Ultimate Historical Edition. Chris Benoit was a severe victim of CTE, And so in that cocktail of death, as I put it, you have to mix in brain damage with whatever addled his brain as well from drug abuse.
Have there been any changes that have been implemented in the pro wrestling industry to help mitigate this kind of impact that and physical impact that these wrestlers are, you know, having to go through every single day?
There have been changes. I mean, the question is, have they been enough? Like the WWE, for example, banned chair shots to the head, except when they don't ban chair shots to the head, and it happens anyway. And that happened actually with Vince McMahon's son-in-law, Triple H, who supposedly got fined by them for doing a chair shot to the head after it was banned. So they try, you know, it's in conflict though with this idea of trying to keep it looking as real as possible, but they, you know, they stop doing some crazy stunts, but they still do others. But the question for pro wrestling is the same as the question I have for pro football, about which I've written books as well. And that is the problem with pro wrestling just like specific things that you can't do, or is the problem with pro wrestling? I mean, is it existentially a sport or an activity where you're going to do stuff that's going to cause long-term brain damage, not necessarily ones that can be diagnosed in real time as concussions, just successions of multiple, you know, subconcussive impact that that affects you in the moment and in later life. I mean, it's that what price glory thing in American sports and entertainment. I mean, how far are you going to go in order to get yourself over, as they say in show business? And you know, wrestlers answer that question for themselves in different ways. And the ones that take the biggest risks have the better chance of becoming popular, but at what cost?
Wow. So we ask all of our guest experts the same question. At the end of the day, if you had to pick a person or thing, it could be a concept, that you think is to blame for the Chris Benoit double murder suicide, who or what would that be?
Okay, so the levels are, as I said, Chris Benoit did it. He's responsible for murdering his wife and their 7-year-old son, and he took his own life. But if you want to look at it more globally, or metaphorically, or philosophically, however you want to put it, it's kind of like pro wrestling killed all of them, and it should be food for thought for all of us. That there is this industry that manipulates fans and manipulates the talent in such a way that what's supposed to be entertainment crosses brutally into real life tragedy for the talent within it. So that's how I would answer that question. Pro wrestling did it. We all did it. If we're fans, we're supporting and buying into something that looks like fun, but is really deadly. And there's no real ultimate answer to that question, except there's a lot of collective responsibility and blame to go around.
Well, Irv, thank you so much for helping us understand this terrible tragedy.
Thanks, Rebecca. This has been awesome. I appreciate the opportunity to talk about it.
Well, we're going to head over to Patreon and continue the conversation and see if we're going to change our verdict. If you'd like to hear our post-interview discussion and final verdict, head over to Patreon and subscribe. Your support is greatly appreciated. Check out our show notes for a link, or head over to patreon.com/thealarmist. And stay tuned, because next week we'll be discussing Megan the movie.
host.
Powered by Acast.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue checkmark next to that thing you love. And be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.